Yeah, I'd love to get into that because I think it's one of the most important things that people are missing right now about this market, right? So look, everybody is kind of raised in this idea that markets work on cash flow evaluation, and everybody's read security analysis and all the Buffett notes. And I'm not trying to suggest that that stuff doesn't work anymore, because in the big picture, there are still those dynamics at play, okay? But what I think people are missing, or that people need to be made more aware of, is the rising impact of what passive investing has done to markets, and how passive investing has changed the plumbing of the markets and made the markets more sensitive to certain things that it wasn't necessarily so sensitive to 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, okay? So what I mean by that is we've seen this rise in passive investing where now passive activity kind of accounts for somewhere between 50, 55% of daily activity on the market. What that means, if you're not passive, is that there is a shrinking pool of liquidity that is available to active managers. Okay, because if all of these flows are ending up in passive, there's less and less flow that is going into the other parts of the market on a relative basis. If there is less flow going into those parts of the market, it can make those parts of the market more susceptible to volatility. Okay, so a really good way to look at this is just in the recent endeavor. I think this kind of caught a lot of people off guard, where if we go back to January to February, mid-February, we saw this really big rise in consumer staples stocks. Okay, so at that point in time, let's just kind of set the table. Mag 7 was already dropping, you know, off 10, 15%, or a little bit more in some cases. And everybody was kind of taking notice of this. Software stocks, which were kind of the next level down on the hierarchy of what funds own, was starting to drop. So Contagion was bleeding through the hierarchy of fund holdings. And now they're starting to see forced selling in software stocks and quality stocks and financials. These are all kind of factor related at that level. And so when your risk manager starts to see those factors going, you get a tap on the shoulder, you have to reduce size. And that's kind of what starts bleeding out. And then you start to look at the smaller parts of the S&P 500 hierarchy, and they're kind of flattish at the time, or not flattish, but they're just not moving as much, okay? And so, okay, if you're going to be very opportunistic and very active about things, you can now hide out there, or you can rotate some capital there in the short term. But the issue is that things like consumer staples, because they're so low on the hierarchy, you know, staples, it's only like, what, 5.5% of the overall S&P 500 weight. You're going to start to move those stocks a lot if you start to plug a lot of money there, okay? And that's exactly what we saw. We saw staples starting to run, right? So you start to see these things trending, stair-stepping higher on a daily basis. And then as the overall selling starts to really overwhelm through the hierarchy, it starts to hit staples. And then staples just kind of like elevators down through this thing, because there's no liquidity on the bid side, okay? So all this, it's taking in flows, and these things are happy to take in flows, but when you try to, once things start hitting VAR limits, it's everybody out at the same time. And because there's no more active flow to catch that bid, you're going to get these big volatility events happening in the lower parts of the S&P 500 liquidity spectrum. I think that we are kind of starting to see that right now with some of the energy companies, right? So staples was 5.5% of the index. Energy from the S&P 500 level is only like 3.5. It's like 3.3 or something. Okay. So that's like an order from a flow perspective, from a liquidity perspective, that's like an order of magnitude lower liquidity. So you don't need a lot of money going into energy sector stocks in order to move the energy sector significantly high, right? And that's kind of what we're seeing right now. The problem there is that unless we continue to see higher and higher energy prices, which, okay, that could happen. But unless we continue to see that, if those energy prices start to fall, you could see very big drops happening in these energy sector names, okay, because of that liquidity factor and because the market plumbing itself is very different than it was 20 years ago, okay?
Yes, so interesting. And in terms of when we focus on the part, how positioning, funding, and hedging sort of interact, I mean, is this then also feeding into this thing that you mentioned with the dealer's call wall, you know, with this sort of thing that kind of capping, you know, the upside by now? Or I mean, help me understand this, because this is something I'm still a total rookie when it comes to options and not a practitioner. So how does it, I've just been reading about, like, dealers are apparently sitting on this $13 billion in positive gamma at sort of this price level, you know, a call wall. And that's why every rally gets mechanically sold back down. Like, maybe you can explain the mechanics of this better than obviously I can, but I guess this is also feeding into how markets today kind of work with all these options and just a derivative market that's out there and that can really yank things around in that sense.
Yeah. So one of the key things that are happening here, and I'll get to the dealer hedging component in a second, but one of the key things that are happening here is that if liquidity starts to contract, in my opinion, this makes these other effects show up more, right? So if we have less fundamental investors that are willing to sit on bids and willing to do that kind of fundamental investing work, then passive capital is kind of sort of trapped. It doesn't respond to this stuff. And that means that the flows now are coming disproportionately from things like CTA moving around, CTA positioning moving around, trend fall, like this, like essentially trend falling moving around. And then options positioning can inform a greater amount of what's actually happening in the markets. Okay. So look, options positioning can really change on a day-to-day basis. So I don't want, like, it's April 10th right now, 11:30 in the morning. I don't want to sort of give a call on what I think is going to do, because it can literally change based on what's happening on zero-day options activity, like from today to tomorrow. Like it can be very sensitive. And so that's where I find that the options, what's happening in the options market is useful on like a day-to-day basis. And it's useful if you see really, really huge clusters of particular activity, but it's not necessarily going to tell you what's going to happen next week, for example, unless you're approaching one of these call wall situations or big put strike or something like that. Okay. So it has a place and it is informative, but it's not going to give you the complete picture. I just want to be clear about that part. Okay. But okay, beyond that, when there are large options positions being put on, dealers who are on the other side of those trades, their job is just to provide that option to you as a buyer or seller. Okay. They're not there taking the directional view opposing to you. Like that's not their business. They're there to sell you this thing that they're going to get and make, you know, money off of taking bid-ask spreads on this stuff. And then they're going to turn around and they're going to hedge their own positioning so that they are not exposed to the other side of your trade necessarily. Okay. Now, this all kind of filters out to where there's a point of once all the positions are netted out against each other, there is this kind of residual position. And it's that residual position that they're hedging against. And the thing is their hedging has to follow a very mechanical kind of rules-based approach if they want to maintain their hedge, right? They can't just start hedging in this kind of like willy-nilly sense where they're kind of going, they're putting their fingers in the air and saying, oh, I think this is how I have to hedge. They are responding to very specific rules in how they have to keep their hedges on. And that's just because of the very sensitivities in the options market. You know, you have delta, you have gamma, there's some charm, you have VANA. So options respond very specifically to things that are happening in the equity markets and volatility. And so dealers have to, in turn, respond to that and hedge their own books in a very predictable way. And it's those predictable flows that help inform kind of people who are watching this stuff very closely what could potentially happen that day or within the next few days, or how the market could potentially respond to moving towards key levels where there's a lot of options positioning on the books.
Okay, I see. Yeah, that's interesting. I want to come back to this one point about passive flows that you mentioned, you know, because you said something about if liquidity is getting thinner, then obviously other things can become more pronounced. But then maybe as a layman again, me and others might be asking, okay, but isn't passive flow by definition that they're passive and that they just keep going on, you know, and it just come through all these institutional investors, you know, who just deploy no matter what. So are we seeing that these kind of recede already or like, yeah, help me understand this, because like some people might be arguing that's exactly the case why we have passive flows nowadays. People just deploy money no matter what, you know. Maybe they kind of go back once the equity markets have receded 20%, but now they probably are still going hard. So like, do we see this coming down in any sense? Or
yeah, so I think that's a really interesting dynamic to look at very closely, right? So passive investing, even right now, even in the midst of equities down, continue to receive inflows, right? You're right that a certain percentage of people's paychecks get automatically rebalanced into these passive investment products, no matter what has happened, okay? And so that makes passive particularly sensitive to things like employment, right? Because employment is the mechanism by which those flows get delivered in passive. And then passive actually is very sensitive at a bigger level to the flow itself, right? So the only thing that can keep passive growing is if it keeps receiving inflows, right? And so where are those inflows coming from? Okay. And this is the point where I think that we can tie passive back into what's happening in credit markets and what's happening fiscal in the fiscal space is that if we are seeing a year over year negative growth rate in fiscal, that's less flow. That's less incremental flow. That means there's less incremental flow going to private sector. That means potentially there's less incremental flow going into passive. Now, the other mechanism here that's important is like, okay, well, credit's been expanding this whole time. What about that money? Well, if we want to examine the AI CapEx meme, right? That money that's going into credit is not necessarily going into the passive flow structure, right? So if you're talking about $600 billion that's supposed to be going into AI spending, that money is not being reinvested domestically. Okay, maybe like $30 billion of that is going into like the actual construction of data centers and HVAC and electrical and that kind of stuff. But by and large, most of that money is being spent on computer chips. And those computer chips are being imported from Southeast Asia, Japan, Korea, Taiwan. And that money is leaving the U.S. and it's getting parked out there. And so that money does not get recycled back into the U.S. economy where it can go back into passive flows and support employment and all this kind of good stuff that was supposed to happen with the AI CapEx build-out. That's kind of how it was marketed. That money all left the country, right? And when you buy imports, when you buy equipment from other places, that's a negative to GDP. Like the GDP equation treats imports as a subtraction, okay? So that mechanically lowers your GDP. So this money is not being recycled internally to support this like passive domestic flow idea. And so that was kind of my bigger point is that passive flows themselves are still positive, but I don't think that they're still at the same rate. And the easiest kind of way to find evidence of that is look at the Mag 7, right? In a true economic reflation, if we had increasing flows, where would that money end up from a market perspective?
Predominantly,
it would end up in Mag 7. It would end up in the most concentrated part of where those flows all come together. And yet we've seen the Mag 7 trade off 15, 20% in some cases over the last 3-4 months here. Okay. If this was a real economic kind of moment where we were seeing reflation, et cetera, those companies should be on the receiving end of those incremental flows, and they're not. And that is the really big warning sign that people are missing. It's the fact that you have your market leaders that are still down and still not responding to this flow activity. That's your real signal here.